All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. This is going to go quick today. We are only doing an hour. I'm sure we're going to have plenty of questions, so we're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it here on this show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and join us. Today is the Power Hour. Joining me from Pittsburgh Power is John and Leroy. We're going to be talking about all things engines and maintenance and troubleshooting and ECMs and you name it. If you've got a question, we are going to get to it and get you an answer. John and Leroy, welcome back, guys.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Great to have you here, and I know you guys are busy over there with all kinds of stuff, so we appreciate you taking your time and coming on and helping us out with some questions. What's new and exciting over there these days?
We've been doing some work with cryogenic treatment of some internal engine parts, camshafts and cam followers in particular. The Cummins ISX seems to have some wear issues there, and there's some heat treating issues or the treatment issues from the factory. They're not the best from what we understand, so we're doing some experimentation right now with cryogenically treating those parts.
You know, I especially get a lot of calls about the ISX, and the cam seems to fail just without a whole lot of warning. You know, we watch oil samples closely, and we can tell a lot from an oil sample, and once in a while we'll catch one, but sometimes there's just not much indication that it's happening. And, you know, it's kind of gotten to the point where I tell people with that engine, you need to be looking at the top end more often. So anything that could help solve or fix that problem would be great.
And this should increase that durability. What the cryogenic treatment does is thermal cycles the material to create a little tighter bond with the molecular structure of the steel. So it's not just like a case hardening or hardening process. It actually affects the whole thing through, but you know, by thermal cycling it multiple times. And so we're hoping to find some more durability there with that. That's the one thing we did this week. And on that same job, we'd like to talk about we had a situation with that customer where there were some things that he'd like to have had done while he was here that never made it to the work order. So we'd like to remind everybody to keep some notes and make sure that when your truck is being checked in that you list everything that you'd like. The customer came to us afterwards and said, hey, we didn't do this or didn't do that, and I talked to Bruce about that weeks ago, or I talked to Pete about that weeks ago, and, well, we talked to a lot of people. So it's really, really hard to have that. So when you're here, I'd like to just remind everybody to have a list ready or give some thought to what you want to have done with your truck. We really are a small shop, and we do our best to move some things, a lot of work through here, but we deal with a lot of people every morning checking them in, and it's really easily, we're all a little easily distracted. It's kind of the nature of the beast for guys like us. So please be ready when you come in and make sure we've got everything on the work order before you sign off on it.
Great idea. And I'll even add to that because I know what it's like going down the road, whether it was in my truck or in my coach and thinking about things like this. And it's easy to just think about them. And you might even think about them multiple times over a week or a couple days. Get in the habit of recording these kind of ideas. Use technology. I don't want you writing while you're going down the road. But there's so much good technology today. You know, phones can be voice activated. They can take notes. You can send text messages with your voice, emails to yourself. There's a thousand ways to do this, but it is such a good habit to get into, as for somebody who spends, you know, 50 to 60 hours a week behind the wheel, you think of a lot of things. And sometimes you think of things so many times you think you told somebody. But again, even if you've had 10 conversations with somebody at your shop, it has to happen when you check the truck in and make the work order. So I like to keep multiple lists when I'm driving. I have a list to remind me about that I want to read. I have a list of things I need to get done at the shop, things I need to get, you know, order online, whatever it might be. And when I think of something, I just record it right then. That way, when it's time and I'm at the shop, I just go back to that list and go, wow, look, there was 9 things I wanted to get done here. Then you can make sure they get on the work order. So that's a great idea.
Thanks.
Let's. What do you say we take some phone calls?
Sounds good.
All right, let's do that. Let's get started in Montana. Sean, welcome to the program.
Howdy, Kevin. I have a PACCAR. It's an MX-13. And basically, to run through what's happened the last couple of weeks, pulled the engine and put a camshaft in it because it was a warranty issue. They just wanted to put a new camshaft in it. I ran for a couple of days, ran from our terminal to down to Laredo, and coming back north, I got the fuel filter replaced in New Braunfels, Texas. Well, they put the wrong fuel filters in there. That was a lot of headache. So I got the right fuel filters in Milwaukee. And in between the fuel filter, right before the fuel place, got up that morning to crank the truck up, and it didn't start. Or it was cranking, but it wasn't starting. Almost like it was vapor locked. The tech came out there, primed the truck, and it fired up. After he primed it and everything, and so they thought it was probably the wrong filter, so they replaced the filters, and then it ran fine for 4 or 5 days, or crunk fine 4 or 5 days. Well, say fine. In the early mornings, it would be it would start, or it would crank, but it would run rough for like the first 10, 15 seconds when it first started. And then I was in the middle of nowhere in Dakota yesterday and got up, went to go start the truck, and it didn't start again. It cranks, but it doesn't start. So I'm wondering if there might be a hole in a fuel line, or maybe fuel pumps, and it keeps throwing a fuel delivery pressure code every time it does it. But it only does it, only throws the code when it doesn't crank in the mornings. And it only, like, I can run all day, you know, do 30-minute breaks, do my load checks and stuff, and it'll crank right back up, but only after a 10-hour break is when it has the rough idle or doesn't crank at all. It's kind of like a hit or miss scenario, I guess.
Got it. Well, it certainly sounds to me like you're losing prime. John, Leroy, do you guys know anywhere specific on this engine to look?
We're not very familiar with that engine yet. That's something that may happen in the future. But it sounds to me like something was disturbed when they did the filters. Maybe you've got plastic lines on this or something. Something might be cracked or loose. You're going to have to look over your whole fuel system or everything. Look in the area where it was worked on last, always. You know, that's usually where you're going to find something wrong. And if they'd already made the mistake of putting the wrong filter on at one point, then whoever did that may have, who knows, they could have stripped the threads on the filter head or something. Something else could be going on there. You're going to have to take a close look in that area.
Okay, I appreciate it. And actually, I'll be taking it to the Western Peterbilt in Fife. I'm probably butchering that, Washington, tomorrow.
Yeah, let them know. what's going on with it and tell them, you know, that you'd had work done and point them in the direction of where it was last worked on, because that's usually where you find the problem.
Okay, I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
No problem.
Thanks for the call. So I get this question a lot. You know, it seems pretty obvious. We were working on the fuel system. It'll start and run just fine unless it sits too long. That's a pretty clear indication we're losing prime slowly. Any tips in general on how to find this? Now, that was a good one. If the last place it was worked on, start there. But sometimes it just comes out of the blue and you weren't working on the fuel system. Do you guys have any good tips, or is it just a matter of getting in and doing the work and looking over the system till you find it?
You've got to look it over pretty well. We've got some diagnostic tools, pretty crude ones. We'll use things like clear hoses and sight glasses to see, move it along the line, you know, get start at the tank and then move to your next fitting after that to see, you know, where you have the bubbles coming from to narrow it down in that way.
Got it. Yeah, okay. The music's playing. Let me get to a break. We'll come back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Leroy here from Pittsburgh Power, and we're answering your questions. Let's head off to Mississippi. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a 91 GMC White. It's got a Detroit 60 series. Unfortunately, I don't know the horsepower. It's got a 9-speed transmission. It's got 411 rear end. I was wondering what rear ends I should change that to, because I don't see the truck ever getting more than 5 miles a gallon with those rear ends as a road truck.
Now, this is a 91, so it would be a DDEC 2. Do you know if it's a 12.7 or an 11.1?
Not sure.
Okay. It would make a difference.
I know the horsepower shows at about 1,800 when you're doing 60 miles an hour.
You mean the RPM?
Yeah, I meant RPM, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. It would actually make a difference. So the first thing I would do is figure out, get the engine serial number, figure out if it's a 12.7 or 11.1. They look almost identical. But the 11.1 does like to run at a higher horsepower. Or now I'm doing it. Higher RPM. The 411s, honestly, with an older DDEC 2 11.1 might not be all that bad if you're running 55 to 60.
Really.
I wouldn't go anything higher than possibly like a 370, unless you were going to go all the way down to something you wanted to run in direct, but I don't think I would do that with a 9-speed. You should be able to get better fuel economy than in the 5s. I mean, I had a lot of 11.1s and a lot of DDEC 2s, and those were 7 mile per gallon trucks all day long. And I used to run 390s in mine. I mean, I still run 390s in, you know, my later model, late 90s, early 2000 Detroit. John, I'm with you on that
100%. I wouldn't go below. I'd maybe venture to go to a 355, but I wouldn't go anything below that. Depending on where he's running, in with that 9-speed, unless he wants to go to a 13-speed or something. But I wouldn't, 370 or 355, I think, would be it.
Yeah, and, okay. And the other thing is, honestly, if you're running 55 to 60, 390s, it just wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. You're not going to pick up any real fuel economy. 370s, you might pick up a little. 355s, we might end up going the other way, especially if it's 11.1. It's not going to pull all that great. And the problem is that even if we pick the perfect gear ratio, you're going to spend $4,000 to change it. And at today's fuel price, it's going to take you 2 years to get it back.
Okay. Working on putting this truck back on the road, basically. I picked it up. It's got 560,000 miles on it. And I'm just trying to figure out what I might want to do for upgrades to get better mileage out of it.
Well, that's the thing. If you pulled into Pittsburgh Power with $4,000 in your pocket and said, let's change gear ratios, or here's $4,000, do everything you can to get me better fuel economy, I imagine that they would be able to double or triple your return with other modifications. John, wouldn't you think so?
Yes, for sure. We could, with some tuning and maybe a power box, we could get you that mileage. You know, the 411, it might be a bit much, but, yeah, I don't know if that's where your money's best spent right now. If the rears are worn out, that's another story.
Does the 91 have electronics that you can use a power box with?
No.
No? Okay. I was wrong on that one.
Okay. It would be all mechanical, right?
It is electronic.
Well, it's electronic.
We just do not have a power box.
Yeah.
Or tuning options for that.
Oh, okay.
Being it's a DDEC 2.
All right. So we start with the DDEC 3.
Yeah, we could convert it to a DDEC 4, and we could go places with that.
Okay.
The DDEC 2 conversion is very popular, and there's a lot of benefits to doing that. For me, I would rather see you do that than go with gears.
Okay.
Yeah, if I were to list out 10 things that we could do to this truck to get better fuel economy and then put them in order of return on investment, gears would probably be 10th or close to. I mean, if you pull in and they do the conversion to a DDEC 4, that could be huge. Fix the exhaust from the manifold back. Build a good, clean exhaust system from the manifold back. Put on a fast system. Put in a fleet air filter. Put on an OPS. You know, all of those things would have a much bigger return. And when you put them together, if this thing's getting 5.5 now, you'll pull out of there getting 7.5. Then you've got some money to pay for the gears. And you might pick up another tenth or two if we get the right gears on it, but it's not going to be big.
Yeah.
Okay.
Switching to DDEC 4 controls is better. It's going to just have a lot better drivability, a lot better mileage, more power. That's really the route to go.
Okay.
And the conversion comes as a kit right from Detroit, so it's not like you're picking out parts. You have to get a different intake manifold, obviously an ECM and a few other miscellaneous parts. But it comes as a kit. It's really not that bad.
And again, you're just going to see so much more of an improvement than with the gears. Like I said, if this is an 11.1, the gears aren't that far off. Those things like to run at a fairly high RPM compared to most of the other trucks today. Let's head off to Indianapolis. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
What's on your mind today?
Yeah.
Well, last time we talked, Bruce, you had talked about being in talks with someone about possibly expanding to the Midwest. I was just going to ask you if you had any update on that for us.
Well, I don't think Bruce isn't on
Bruce
with us.
Bruce is not on with us today. I know he's working on some things, and he's got some potential partners out there. And as far as I know, I don't know how far those discussions have gone. I know there is an interest in doing it, and that's about all I can tell you right now.
No red tape cutting yet.
No grand opening yet.
That's right. Yeah, getting there.
Okay, great. Well, y'all just let us know when you do, and I'm sure that shop's going to be covered up as well. That'd be perfect for me since I run right down 57 right through the middle of the country. I know y'all talked about maybe the St. Louis area, so that'd be a big hit.
Yeah, that's definitely on the list. Yep. Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
I also had a question about gliders. Now, Kevin, weren't you all talking about possibly doing something with gliders this upcoming year? I've been looking at new gliders, and also Schneider, of course, has a ton of the 2011-2012 gliders for sale. But I was waiting to see if we maybe had any updates on, weren't you and Bruce going to do something with gliders or in talks to do?
We've got a potential partner in helping us with the build of the gliders. We would do the engines and all of our bits and pieces. Assembly here has kind of been an issue. My guys are busy building engines and fixing trucks and a lot of other stuff. So we're really eager to do more gliders and do another glider sometime soon, as soon as we find someone ready to go on that. So if that's something you're interested in, go ahead and give us a call, and I'd love to talk to you about it.
Okay, definitely. Sounds good. Well, this 2005 Volvo, I don't know how much more she's got in her. It's already at 1.3 yep. million miles, and a couple weeks ago I started getting some oil fumes coming through the dash vents with the fresh air vent, and nothing burnt, just smelled like hot oil, and I took it to Cummins Power South in Atlanta there, you know, right by home base, dropped it off, and they're saying with the test I'm at about 12, and they say the limit's about 18, and so I don't know how much longer I've gotten this old girl here. And thinking about picking up one of the Schneider gliders, just have as a backup truck, still run the Volvo and until she fails, and basically have it pay for the Schneider glider. And I was going to call and see what you guys thought about in terms of pricing. Kevin, would you go for the truck with the lowest possible miles, even if it is about $15,000 or $20,000 more? That truck would have about 300,000 miles on it. And then they also have trucks with about 550,000 miles for like I said, about 20 grand less. And I just was wanting to get y'all's thoughts about that.
You know, there have been a couple times over the years where I've been able to pick from a whole group of trucks that are virtually identical other than mileage. And this is the same case. Schneider built these gliders. They're almost all the same. So I have a whole list of criteria that I go through on condition and that kind of thing. But when it comes to mileage, what I normally do is create a formula, and it's kind of hard to go through the formula, but I'll give you the idea of what we're looking at. So let's just say that you keep a truck for 1,000,000 miles. It just gives us a good place to start. Take the price of the truck and divide it into the 1,000,000 miles, and that gives you kind of a cost per mile to buy that truck. Then you use that formula to compare the mileage and the dollars. Does that make sense?
It does, yes, it does. I know how you had said that's one of the best values out there today, the youth gliders. So I may just go ahead and pick one of these that pay off and then talk to Bruce and Leroy about custom specking out the new one for maybe later on in the year. I appreciate the help, guys.
There you go. Yep, I've got to get to a break. We'll come back right after this and get some more of your calls and questions. Just that formula is just a way to put things in numbers. Numbers help us make decisions. You know what it costs to buy the truck. You create a formula. You say, okay, we've got 300,000 miles. It's worth this. It's got 500,000. It's worth this. And that's a place to start. Then we still look at condition and lots of other things. We'll be right back. Kevin Trust. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is the Power Hour. Joining me today, John and Leroy from Pittsburgh Power. We're going to head off to Oregon. Don, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What can I help you with?
I believe Bridget sent you over an oil sample.
Okay.
So, quick history. You'll remember this. This is the 2010 DD15, it spun a bearing in December of 2014, and we replaced the motor.
Got it. Okay, I do remember. And I have good news. you are going to be a very boring call today because there's nothing to talk about on this oil sample. It looks like you could have just poured it right out of the bottle.
I'm aware of that. My question is we previously discussed extending full flow filters maybe out to 75 or 100,000 because Freightliner in Detroit recommend 50,000. I was just wondering, should I maybe extend my samples out or keep doing them every 25?
You know, on this engine, I wouldn't extend the full flows. Wait a minute. Let me rephrase that. I would extend your samples and your OPS filters because this literally is just super clean. So what you've got on that truck is you've got kind of a pseudo-bypass system right from the factory. That's why they do 50,000-mile drains. That's a pretty good filtration system. So then you put the OPS on top of that, and you're just keeping the oil very, very clean, which is a good thing. When we start extending sample and OPS filter changes, I'd like to do it in increments, not just make a big jump. So if you're doing it at 25, I would do your next one at 35. I would, you know, on the full flow filters, there was a time, believe it or not, that I used to only change my full flow filters once a year because the OPS was doing such a good job of keeping the oil clean. And then OPS kind of said, you know, there's always the chance that that filter is going to deteriorate and that's just more junk you've got in the system. So I switched it to every 6 months. And it didn't have to be in schedule with my other services because it was so easy to change those that I just put it on the calendar and changed them at 6 months and then always did my OPS at 25. But I would extend your sample and OPS out to 35.
Excellent. And that's all I have, and I guess we'll see you at Council Bluffs.
All right, looking forward to it. Can't wait to see you there. John, you're going to be there too this year, right? Uh-oh, you know what? I got to bring those guys back on the line. Hey, there you go.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, can't wait. It's getting close too. What really feels close for us because we have so much to do before we get there. So, speaking of so much to do, we've got lots of questions. Let's get to them. We're off to Arizona. Rusty, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Kevin. I've got a 99th century with a DDEC 4 12.7 Detroit. Getting a little over 10 miles to the gallon, 10.16 the last three fuel tanks. I'm a little over 9.5 on a 90-day average.
Wow.
Stop there for just a second. What kind of truck is this in and what operation?
It's a 99th century, 48-inch flat-top sleeper running a 48-foot Ravens all-aluminum with a lift axle on the trailer, a lift axle on the truck, ported jet hot cutter manifold, Lee burner exhaust, the fleet air filter, the FAST system, the OPS, trailer tires on the lift axle, and I'm 82% off the ground with my trailer rear axle, and I'm 68% off the ground with my drive axle. And I never
exceed 60 miles. You're running really, really light stuff.
No. Well, I can run 26,000 with both axles off the ground. I can run 45,000 with my drive axle off the ground. I can legally scale 53,000. I can legally scale 53,000 without a permit.
Wow.
So
that's an awesome setup.
Yeah, it's just super lightweight and super singles on everything. But I do run recap tires on my lift axle just because they're off the ground so much. I don't know that it will pay. But anyways, my question is that being that I'm getting such great fuel economy and I've had 90,000 miles since locked overhead in 14 months, do I bother going into the upper end and rerunning that overhead? It's starting to backfire within the first hour of driving at between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. So it's got 390s in it and an overdrive transmission.
Backfire?
Yeah, describe the backfire to me. That's piqued my curiosity there.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. It backfired, but only do it like in the first hour of driving, usually, or sometimes late in the afternoon. So it's just kind of, but it's not cold. I'm in Arizona, so it's, you know, 60, 70 degrees at least by in the morning when I take off.
So you hear it, does it make the backfire out the intake or the exhaust? Where does it come from?
The exhaust, and it puffs white smoke when it does it.
It's how you've got an injector that's on its way.
Okay.
Yeah, I would definitely.
Yeah, it's something other than that overhead.
Yeah, for sure. You know, overhead 90,000 miles, it's not that big of a deal. We go farther than that. But you've definitely got an injector, I think, that's either hanging up or, you know.
Breaking spring or something.
Broken spring on an injector. You've got something going on with an injector for sure.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, supposed to be if it puffs white smoke, it's probably throwing a little extra fuel in there from time to time. But once you get it warmed up or once you're down the road for a while, I guess it's closing, okay, but or you wouldn't have the fuel mileage that you've got, but that doesn't mean it's not intermittently, you know, hanging open.
Okay. All right. And what else should I do to this in order to get better fuel economy? We're putting skirts on it this week, and I've got microblue wheel bearings that I put in the I've already put them in the steer axle, the trailer axle. We're going to do the drive axle. The two axles that are off the ground, we're not going to mess with just because they're off the ground so much.
I don't know how much more you've got.
Let me jump in, because it depends on why you're asking. If you're asking to get better fuel economy to save money, don't bother. At your fuel economy, with today's fuel price, there is nothing left that would be cost effective. If fuel went to $5 a gallon, we might talk about some tweaks here and there. But, you know, if you're at $5 and you make a 3/10 improvement, there's a big savings. If you're at $10 and you make a 3/10 improvement, at today's fuel price, it's almost no savings. So if it's for the bottom line, don't bother. If it's just one of those obsessions, which I understand, and you just want the absolute best fuel economy you can get, there might be some things you could do, but just know it's not going to pay to do it right now.
Yeah, what I'm looking for is to be able to hold 10 at least for 6 months, even a full year, and then I want to go and try and sell that service to the bigger fleets or other companies in order to try and say, look, this is what I've done, this is how I've done it, and I'll help your fleet get a whole lot better fuel economy. And You know,
I think there is some need for that in the market, but let me give you a little advice. Forget the big fleets. Those guys do next to nothing to improve fuel economy. And it's not like they don't know what to do. You trip over advice. If you're in this industry, you have to see the things that get better fuel economy. They're all over the place. So, and all you would have to do, and it's pretty well known, there are a couple big fleets that do it. Look at Mesilla Valley. They are amazing at improving fuel economy. All you would have to do if you're another fleet is copy what they do. You don't have to pay anybody. The problem that comes in is that the way you do it on one truck is way different. The way you do it on one truck with you driving it is way different than what a fleet needs to do with 1,000 trucks and drivers in them and 100% turnover. So that's part of the reason the fleets don't bother. If you're going to do this, I would target very small fleets where the owner is still very active in the company every day. And even then, you've got to beat on a lot of doors to find somebody who's interested in fuel economy. As crazy as it sounds. And there's the perception right now that why bother with fuel economy? Fuel's cheap.
Yeah, well, I thought about that, and I also thought about just building trucks, and then as long as once I get the 90-day average, then selling them. Because
that,
the pre-EGR
I think,
truck
is actually a better idea.
The pre-EGR trucks are all over the place in Southern California still, and I'm in Arizona, so.
Well, and not only are they there, but right now used truck prices are in the gutter, which is a good thing if you're looking to pick some up, recondition them, get the fuel economy up, and resell them. That's actually a much easier sell than trying to go help lead the fuel economy. Not to say you can't do it, I will tell you it's very, very frustrating. There was a time where I worked on it a little bit. I wouldn't go back to it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Robinson. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Joining me, John and Leroy from Pittsburgh Power. And just another quick comment to Rusty. Rusty, I'm not trying to discourage you from doing that. I think there is a place in the market where you could do it. I just don't think it's worth spending the kind of money you're going to have to spend to get a little more fuel economy out of what you've got. If you were to go to somebody right now and say, look, you know, I get 9 consistently, I get 10 in the summer and fall, and here's how I've done it, and you document it. If you don't sell them with that, 2 or 3 more tenths isn't going to sell them either. So I wouldn't spend your money on trying to squeeze more out of your truck right now. I would spend your time and money putting together a marketing plan on how to go to these guys and sell them on the idea. Let's get to some phone calls. Down in the final segments, we're going to get to as many as we can. Let's go to Ohio. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good.
Good. Can we help you with?
I've got a 04 Western Star 4900. I know, one of the greatest fuel trucks there is out there. With a 14-liter Detroit, a 13-speed, and 373 rears. I'm pulling about 6.2 right now, and I haul a van or a reefer. Usually I'm right around 43,000, 44,000 for my weight. I'm just trying to figure out how to bring that up. I got to get over 7. This is the first truck I've ever had that I've never been over 7.
Got
it.
So
are there...
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Have you got a boost gauge in it?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Do you use that to help coach yourself on driving?
I do. I am very, very, I'm running, right now I'm running a little bit hot because I got to get to an appointment. But normally I'm 60, 61 miles an hour religiously.
Okay, good. And at what boost pressure are you normally operating?
I'm pulling right around 16 to 17 at that speed.
Oh. That's a lot.
Oh, it is an EGR.
That is a lot.
Still should be able to be lower
what's
than that.
Have you done any modifications to it at all yet?
The only thing that I have done is I've got an old school mechanic that put a resistor in behind the barometric pressure to shut off the EGR. That's the only modification.
Yeah,
Leroy,
that's where your extra
you
boost
on that one.
Yeah,
that's where your extra boost pressure is coming from because you forced it into boost mode all the time. And it's over-boosting for the fact that it thinks that you're at high altitude and you have no oxygen. That's why you're over-boosting like that. If you wanted to get more mileage, we can definitely do a tune that would easily put you into the 7.
Okay.
Without over-boosting. You're wasting a lot of energy making extra boost that you don't need.
All right.
And that's one of
the
problems.
Yeah, and I would start with some of the simple stuff. You know, get a scan gauge in there to help you more with the driving. Get the Pittsburgh Power muffler on there, a fleet air filter. I mean, in those 3 items, you don't have $1,000. And the return would pay for any of the tuning you do. And with those 3 items in the tuning, you're probably going to be in the 7s. That's the low-hanging fruit. That's the kind of stuff we could get quick.
Okay, so the muffler, the scan gauge.
Fleet air filter and the tune.
Air filter and the tune for sure. Yep. And get
okay.
that resistor out. Get that resistor out of there as well.
Okay. All right. That'll work. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Sounds
thanks
good.
For
You're
the
welcome.
Call. Those. Yeah, those I like. I mean, you get the, you know, rusty up around 10 and you're trying to tweak a little bit and it's going to cost you a fortune. And on the other hand, you know, you've got somebody down in the low sixes and we can pull them up into the mid sevens without spending much money at all.
Yeah, that's Go ahead. Oh, this is reminding me of my day, the race engineering. I'd spend thousands of dollars and a whole lot of time looking for tenths of seconds around a racetrack, and now it's just tenths of miles per gallon. It's almost the same process exactly.
Right. Yeah, the difference, though, just so everybody knows, the difference is tenths of a second in racing can add up to tens of thousands of dollars.
Tens of thousands
and that's
of dollars,
the only,
yes. Yep.
Yeah. Literally. So that's the only difference here. When fuel is at $5 a gallon, I was chasing every tenth as well. And I like that. It's
yep.
challenging. It's fun. That's how I learned. But there's also a balance there. And I've always tried to explain that to people is that the ultimate goal here for most of us is not to get the absolute best fuel economy we can get. The ultimate goal is to put more money to the bottom line. And we don't want to, you know, we could go out and build a truck with a bunch of titanium to lighten the weight. We'd get better fuel economy, but we wouldn't pay for it in 100 years.
Nope, never. That would never. So we've got the same thing. Yeah, I guess exactly the same process. We've got there's low hanging fruit there as well. There's simple setup changes and adjustments and things that you could make that they cause nothing. Just some good solid thinking, and you make big gains with that. And you could spend tens of thousands of dollars as well just to find a tenth or two.
Yep, exactly. Let's try to squeeze in another call. Let's go to Minnesota. Gene, welcome to the program.
How you doing today, Kevin? Hey,
good.
I have a 2003 Volvo with a N14 435. I actually live in Dayton, PA. I'm about 45 minutes away from y'all's shop down there.
Good.
Every Pittsburgh car. I'm just looking to see what. I picked this truck back in November and slowly working, building some money up to where I can do a couple things. I just want to, again, I'm looking at improving my bottom line. What can I do to the truck? What different options to maximize my bottom line? What I'm looking for.
So I think we have another case of low-hanging fruit here.
There should be a lot there, yeah.
Yeah.
The usual, the stuff that Kevin just talked about, the mufflers and fleet air filter. I'm a fan of the manifolds, the ported and polished manifolds make a pretty big difference. And some, I don't know, Leroy, what do we do with the N14?
We can tune that engine on.
So. Tune that as well. So we've got some tuning we could do for you as well.
But yeah, that's, I know I'm only like 45 minutes away from your shop when I'm home.
Yes, stop by at some point. We could prioritize. We could look at what you've got there and just prioritize where you ought to go first and the first big chunks we could take off.
Yeah, we got to make sure that the truck's running well. Make sure you get rid of any issues that you have right now. That's one of the biggest things is you can't tune an engine that's not running right to start with.
Yeah, my fuel mileage right now is varying. If I'm running heavy, I'm in the mid to high fives. If I'm running medium load, I can actually get up to almost 7.5 miles a gallon. So my fuel mileage is varying as well.
Yeah.
That's understandable.
You know, Leroy, that was a great point. And it's the order that I put things in when we talk about fuel economy. Make sure the thing's running right to begin with. I like seeing an oil sample. If that can tell us a lot, making sure the overhead's set right, making sure the charger cooler isn't leaking. Some of the tune-up stuff you guys do. But, you know, when I hear, he didn't say empty to heavy load being a 2 mile per gallon spread. He kind of said an average load to a heavy load. That, to me, usually indicates there is something wrong mechanically. We shouldn't have that big of a spread without, you know, we're not really changing the weight that much. There shouldn't be that big of a spread in the fuel economy.
No, that could be a simple boost leak or something, though. We just need to give a look,
right.
Look and over first and then decide.
Yeah, so, you know, the most of the time, the answers we're going to give about how do we improve fuel economy, especially if somebody hasn't even started yet, are going to be the same. We're going to hit those really inexpensive items, the scan gauge, the muffler, the fleet air filter, some tuning. It's almost always going to be the same answer. But when you guys, if somebody pulls up and says, here's my truck, how can I get better fuel economy, they're going to get the best answer possible because you're going to have your hands on it, you're going to have your eyes on it, you're going to have your diagnostic tools on it, and you'd be able to really tweak what they should do. I mean, we should just start calling you guys Fuel Mileage Headquarters. Just pull in, we'll figure it out, and create a plan for you.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'd like that. So I'm looking at the clock, and there isn't any time. Anything you guys want to wrap up with in about 30 seconds?
Feel free to give us a call with anything that you any questions you have at all. Call, you could ask for me when you call in. I've been running the shop here right now. I'm also doing technical direction as well. Looking for new products and some other things we'll update you on in the next show or two. But, feel free to contact us anytime you want at 724-360-4080.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. We'll see you again next week. That was 724-360-4080 or PittsburghPower.com. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford.